This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. Sorry for the static on the radio. I forgot to turn down my radio that was set to the channel that I use on my smartphone. And so when the smartphone is not plugged in, then, you know. So, anyways. Speaking of smartphones, I did download a fun little app called Shush. And whenever you turn down the volume on your smartphone to zero, then it pops up and says, okay, how long? And, you know, it remembers the last setting you had. And so just right now I turn down the volume on my smartphone and it pops up and says an hour and a half and I say shush, and after an hour and a half it'll turn itself back on, all the sound, which is good because I don't know about you, but sometimes I turn down my cell phone and then I forget to turn it back on and then I'm not getting my notifications and yada, 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 yada. So anyways, useful things, just useful things. It's been a good week. Had some nice conversations with friends this week. Was actually supposed to get together with a friend on Tuesday, and then his son's daycare lost power, so didn't get to chat there. But had a nice breakfast with a couple last Saturday, and it's been a good week. Been plowing along on the book. I think I'm going to hit my 5,000 words this week. Still kind of settling into it a little bit. Not really sure exactly where we're going, but you know, this is, you just keep writing and things open up. There's been a couple of things that have already opened up for this book, so, you know, it's going to be fine. It is an experiment in time. It's the one thing about writing that's intriguing. There are certain art forms, visual art forms, that you take in all in one shot. And then there are other art forms, well, like painting and sculpture and that sort of thing. There's other art forms that are linear. And so you have to sort of enjoy them in time. Reading a book, listening to a play, listening to a symphony, piece of music, any of that kind of stuff is linear. All of them, though, for the creator, are experiments in time. Because at some point, you get started creating this work of art. And I was, although I'm not sure how many people would actually call what I do art, but it is art for me in the sense that it brings satisfaction and it affects my world and it allows me to be creative. And so all of those things factor in as an artiste. That I don't know of any artist who is able to instantly bring into being the art that they produce, although I'm sure there are some that have some way to do it. There's always a process. There's an idea and then a developing of that idea and a maturing of that idea. And in that process, it's really fascinating because there is a patience that you have, that it's all going to work out and it's all going to be okay. Otherwise, you just get yourself bound up and you never do anything. So anyway, so that's going well. Everything seems to be puttering along at my major client. Finally put in the fix last week or this week. Cut over to tokenize our credit cards this week on the web store they have. And that all seemed to go smooth. I forgot one little piece. But it's a subsystem that doesn't push a lot of orders, and so we found out that it happened, and when it took care of that, and that all seems to be fine. What else? It's been a pretty quiet week. Looking forward to being off tomorrow. And going to get started fairly early with grocery shopping with my parents because my dad has a hearing appointment. Want to get the grocery shopping done before the hearing appointment. And I have an appointment and getting back home so I can do some writing. So, ta-ta. I finally made it up kind of through the exposition piece of the book. And now we're ready to actually do some shoot-em-ups and blow-em-ups and strafe-em-ups and destroy things. And so, I've had a couple of beta readers come back and with some nice words about the book, and one of them made the statement, yeah, lots of action. I said, yes, yes, that should be a characteristic of these books. There's going to be a lot of action to keep moving things forward. Not a whole lot of sitting around in a circle singing kumbaya, so it's just going to be very interesting to see if I can actually keep this going for 24 books. I mean, it's... we'll see. I think there's enough stuff that's going to be happening with the overarching story that I can keep things moving along, but... There's going to be a whole lot of subplot stuff going on, because I got to fill up a 300-page book with subplot stuff. But again, it's very interesting because you get started and then, like with this book, I got started and it's called Windfall Broadcast is the name of this book. I got started and then I thought, oh, I should do that at the beginning. And that led to kind of a quasi little moment at the beginning. It's still not tweaked out. I'll get it tweaked out later, but it's good enough for now. So that little moment then led to some other things this week as I was kind of processing in the background. And, you know, so this book is going to have kind of the ta-ta-ta, you know, in it where we start introducing a theme that's going to start developing out later, which I was going to wait till way later before I actually... dun-dun-dun. But we're going... At this point, I think I'm going to start dropping hints along the way that something's coming. Which, if people would just read the poem that I'm basing this on, they'll know something's coming. But, of course, people won't. And that's okay. Anyway, so that's going fine. And I'm enjoying myself. And it's going well. And do a little writing tonight. Not a ton, but a little writing tonight. Thursdays I spend some time with my wife on Tuesdays and on Thursdays, and on Saturdays we go out and get something to eat. And, so it's good. It's good. It's good. It's good. This week I had several things as we've been going along here that I've been ticking off of things I want to talk about on the podcast, and I saw this article. Oh, it's been 3 or 4 weeks now, 4 or 5 weeks. And I thought the guy had some interesting points. And I was pleased to see that I have taken a small step to implement what he's talking about in this article. Although I haven't necessarily taken the biggest step that I could take. Which would be much more, what did they call that? Require much more intestinal fortitude to take a bigger step. But I thought this was an interesting article. The name of the article was, "Your Lifestyle Has Already Been Designed," (, "The Real Reason for the 40-Hour Workweek," (), by a man named David Kane. Apparently, he took some time off to travel around the world, just kind of go visit some places and do what he wanted, which sounds very cool. He must be single. But it sounds like a very cool thing to do. And he's writing this article now that he's back in the engineering industry and he's got a well-paying gig. And he said, it feels like my life is finally getting back to normal after 9 months of traveling, which... Excuse me. That sounds like a really cool thing. One of the things I'm hoping is that everybody's healthy enough and financially we're good enough that, you know, when we get to that age where we're retired, that my wife and I can do some traveling. You know, we certainly can't travel all the time because we help, specifically my wife helps with watching the grandkids, and that's a help to our kids, and so, but, you know, it might be nice to kick out and go for a week every 3 or 4 months or so, and just go visit someplace. So apparently, this guy had saved up enough that he went for 9 months worth of traveling, and, he said because he'd been living a different lifestyle while he was away, he said this sudden transition to a 9-to-5 existence exposed something about it that he had overlooked before. And I thought he had some fairly interesting things to say. He said one of the things that he's noticed now that he's made this transition to 9-to-5 again, and he is, in fact, making some pretty good money, is he said from the moment he was offered the job, he said he's been more careless with his money. Say he's not really stupid, but, you know, pretty quick to pull out his wallet and do stuff. He said, for instance, I'm buying expensive coffees again. He said, even though they aren't nearly as good as New Zealand's exceptional flat whites, I'm assuming that's a wine, and he doesn't get to savor the experience like he did when he was just sitting and drinking them on a sunny cafe patio. He said, but despite all of that, he said when he was away, those purchases were less impulsive, and he actually enjoyed them more. And he said he's seen that pattern in himself. And he said he's not talking about big, extravagant purchases. He's talking about little stuff. He even uses the term promiscuous spending. Spending on things that don't really add a lot to his life. And he said, in addition to the interest that this has for him that he's doing this, the fact of the matter is he's not actually going to get paid for another 2 weeks. And he said as he's been thinking about this, he's realized that, you know, he does typically spend more during flush times where he pulls back on that when he's in a backpacking lifestyle. And that when he's in this backpacking lifestyle, he's more aware, but in fact, he enjoys what he spends his money on more. And he observed that when you're more flush with money, he said there's this kind of feeling of power that you get when you drop a couple of 20s without a trace of critical thinking. He said it feels good to exercise that power of the dollar when you know that it will grow back pretty quickly anyways. And that's an interesting observation. And me personally, I would say, you know, well, that's probably the flesh. And I notice even my own life that I have enough money that things my wife perhaps would think about, I don't necessarily spend a lot of time thinking about. Now, you know, one of the interesting sidebars to this whole article got me thinking about, so is that flesh or is that spirit? I have a lot of excuses that I make. You know, my wife will put something on the grocery list and she'll ask me later, well, how much did that cost? And I'll say, sweetie, I didn't even look. You said you wanted it. We have finances. I got it for you. And again, we're not talking about extravagant purchases there. We're talking about a $3 item, a $4 item. But I don't pay any attention at all. Whereas if I had less money, you know, maybe I'd carry around a calculator with me and figure out what the best price was and figure out which generic was closest and all that kind of stuff. And I just don't do that. I mean, I'm grateful to be blessed to where I don't need to do that. But what I tell myself about that is that doing that would chew up more time. I would probably get it for my wife anyways. So what's the point of wasting the time? You know, she said she wanted it. Fine. Boom. Done. Moving on. Because at this stage in my life, time is more precious to me than money. And so I weigh all of those things. You know, if I buy something that's not quite what I wanted and didn't work out, unless it's, you know, $20, $40, something in there, if there's any chance I might use it at all, I don't take it back. Because it's just time standing in the line, you know. Anyways, so he said one of the surprising discoveries about all this is he said that he spent much less per month traveling foreign countries, including countries more expensive than Canada, than he did as a regular working Joe back home. So being overseas in countries that were more expensive than Canada, where he's from, he actually spent less than he spent just staying at home and working at a job. And while he was backpacking, he had more free time. He was visiting some of the most beautiful places in the world. He was meeting new people. He was calm and peaceful, having an unforgettable time. And somehow it cost him less than his humble 9-to-5 lifestyle in one of Canada's least expensive cities. And he said, so how is this possible? And he goes on to speculate that in the West, we have a lifestyle of unnecessary spending that has been deliberately cultivated and nurtured in the public by big business. Well, yeah, absolutely. Because as you're sitting there watching TV, as you're surfing the net, you are just constantly being bombarded with stuff that is in essence telling you, oh, if you just had this, your life would be better. And see, now you bought it. Oh, yay, great thrill. Oh, now you need something else. I mean, it's just a fact of life that, as he said in the article, big businesses seek to encourage the public's habit of casual and non-essential spending whenever they can. He gave an example of research that showed that if kids nagged their parent about something, that there was a non-trivial percentage of time that the parents would actually break down and buy it for their kids, just to get the kids to stop nagging. So, what do businesses do? They target the kids. You know, they go after the Sunday morning cartoons and try to just make things look exciting as possible so that the kids will go, Mommy, Mommy, I want that, I want that. I'm getting my mail, one moment. Which, honestly, is... Oh, someone must have already picked up the mail. Or we got nothing today, which would be unusual. Which, obviously, is a bit unethical. Well, yes, unethical. I was going to say not unethical to the businesses, because they'll just say that's good marketing, but it is unethical. But that's their engine. That's how they get people... That sounded like I ran into something. How could I run into something? I'm in the middle of the road. Oh, maybe there was a little stick and I ran over it and it popped up. Anyways, so the crux of the article is that we are in an environment where businesses have caused us, tried to convince us, that we need to keep spending money. And then this is where it gets interesting, because his supposition is that the reason that we have a 40-hour work week is not because workers are not productive enough that they could work a 30-hour work week and have more time and still get done all the things that needed to be done with business. The reason that we have a 40-hour work week is because, let's see, my wife is walking by. Does she need in? I'm looking to see. She's shaking. She's not shaking her head. She is. Do you need something, sweetie? Yeah, finishing up. I'm almost done. I'll be down here in a couple of minutes. Anyways, so his supposition is that the reason corporations sustain a culture of this sort is to develop the 40-hour work week as a normal lifestyle. Because he said if you tie people up for 5 days a week and all you give them is time on the weekends, you time starve them, which then leads them to spend more on the weekends for entertainment and conveniences because our free time is so scarce, which is that's an interesting proposition. He said that he'd only been back to work for a few days, he said, but already noticing that the more wholesome activities are quickly dropping out of my life, walking, exercising, reading, meditating, and extra writing. He said one conspicuous similarity between these activities is they cost little or no money, but they take time. And now that he's working a 40-hour job, he doesn't have time. And he said it's really hard, though, to go into a business and say, you know what, I'd really just prefer to work 30 hours a week. He said because they say, well, that's fine. We'll get somebody else for your job. You know, because either you work a full-time job or it's zero or it's part-time. He said his clients and all the contractors are firmly entrenched in this standard workday culture. So he said it isn't practical to ask them not to ask anything of me after 1 p.m., even if I could convince my employer to do so. And he claims that, you know, one of the engines that businesses use to keep people buying stuff is to keep their workers starved. He said, because if people finally decided, you know what, we're not spending money on all that junk we don't need, he said the whole economy would collapse. And so I thought that was an interesting viewpoint. I've had the good fortune in my life to sort of step back a bit and end up just working. And I didn't plan it this way. It was just a collusion of events. You know, only work 33, 34 hours a week. And that gives me Friday free. And I got to say, it works out really well. Of course, I'm an independent contractor, so I can at my own peril set my own times. But I've been able to make that work. Even when I took on this new project, I was able to look at the executives in this new project and say, okay, I only bill 34 hours a week. 10 of that needs to go to supporting projects I've already done here. So basically, you're going to be getting about 25 hours a week. They didn't look completely thrilled with that, but they said okay, because they want the skill set. And I consider that to be an extraordinary blessing that I'm able to do that. Because having a consistent three-day weekend means that I can take care of my parents. And we try to get everything done on Fridays. And it also means that I've got more time to write. So that's worked out pretty good. You know, who knows in the future, after I get my 15 final payments in, monthly payments, where I just have to keep body and soul together to reach my goal for my retirement funds. Who knows? You know, maybe after that, maybe once I end up in my 60s or something, maybe I'll just rock back to 20 hours a week so that I can just get it done in two or three days. And, you know, It'll be interesting to see how that all works out. Anyways, this is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.